You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the China Shop. Get your asses inside. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, well, you know, I've got a case of the tired going on for the last month or so, but I'm powering through.
I fucking hate that.
Yeah.
All right. So we got a low energy show today, huh?
Oh.
You covered it up pretty well with that intro.
Oh, yeah. Then I immediately let everybody know. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brutal honesty.
Come on in the shop with us today, folks. Sit back, relax, hedge against that rage machine. We'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here smashing our way through a complete set of fine china, sharing those ever-growing strategies for maximizing gains and cutting losses. If you are new to the shop and stock trading in general, you can always check out our knowledge center or resource center on financialineptitude.com. Or you can give one of our beginning trading episodes a listen. We'll have all those links in the episode description for you. But the best place to be is check out our Discord server. Kyle and I get on there every day. It's just a really awesome, free place to be. There aren't any paid tiers or special access areas because we don't think people should pay for what we don't pay for. And when you do join that server, we're the only show I know of that does this. You send us a private message with your email or mailing address, and we'll send you some smash it yourself swag straight from the shop. We're just glad everybody's here. We have a lot of fun. It's always better with friends.
Always better.
Always better. Right. Any show news going on today, Kyle?
Well, let's see. We just finished recording with Anthony Vecino.
Vecino.
Sorry, Anthony Vecino. Real estate expert working out of Minneapolis. That was a really interesting conversation.
Oh, yeah, that was a good time.
Next week, we've got Anthony Fatsies, host of What the Finance. Then Order Flow Labs, Leo and Flary are back after that. And then Derek Oldensmith. He's a educator and a trader. Derek is a day trader, swing trader, portfolio manager, and then he also develops and mentors entry-level traders. So that should be another really good conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
We also have a couple new songs to debut today, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Big shout out to Reyesaurus.
Yes. New crypto song she submitted. If anybody else wants to take a crack at those, you're welcome to send your submissions to our email.
Yeah.
twobulls@financialineptitude.com. That's the number two.
That's right. And don't think for a second we don't want to hear your musical talents. We definitely do.
Anything that makes less work.
Shh, don't tell them that. Don't tell them that. Shit. Gets out of the bag. Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, folks, strap in. We've got a gangly, garish,
awkward,
gargantuan episode today. Oh, she said gangly, gawky, garish. There you go. Plenty sure. of stocks on the radar, market moving news, and more options than TikTok has cranky victim videos. No, too controversial.
Is that a new thing? I don't know. Wait, what is cranky what?
Cranky victim videos?
Is that a thing?
Okay, so what just happened to me is this person did this thing and I just can't deal.
Oh, God. That's why I stay off TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, reach out to us, folks. We do love your messages and comments on Twitter and Facebook. Discord, if you're old school, you can send us an email to, as Kyle said, twobulls@financialineptitude.com. That's the number two. Or you can even give us a phone call, 725-22-BULLS. Maybe you got a hot stock tip. Maybe you want to tell us about a great trade you just made. Or maybe you and your brothers have just mutated into giants, and using your ninja training, you set out to rid the city of the fearsome ninja gang. It doesn't matter. We just love it when you reach out.
The Foot Clan.
Oh, the Foot.
You had me second guessing myself there. It's like, wait, they didn't turn into giants. They
No, they did. They did.
I guess they did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Compared to other turtles, yes.
Yeah, the fifth brother that didn't touch the ewes was like, oh, shit, you're so fucking huge. And then they stepped on him. Done. Only four brothers.
Keep stalling, Dan. Maybe we don't have to talk about the bet.
That stupid bet. Why do I make such poor decisions, Kyle?
I know I lost money.
Yeah.
I'll just go ahead and go. I took Bed Bath & Beyond. I thought I should just short the shit out of it. And it was looking really good on Monday. It opened at 1972, and it was making its March shorts, filling that gap. And then it decided to change its mind and went back up and closed at 2210, which is just about where my second entry point was. So that takes my total down from 476.10 to 459.59.
Oof.
I will not be winning this month, I don't think.
Well, I don't think it's going to be me either. I, like an idiot, all I had to do was go long this stock at all-time highs, but no, I gotta try and be cute and jump on top of a rising grenade. I shorted Zim half at the open, half at 81. It opened at $80.06, very quickly got to 81,
mm-hmm.
and then hit my stop Tuesday, my stop of 83.
Yeah, you were out pretty fast.
It ended the week, by the way, at like 90. Did it end at 90? It got as high as 90.
Why didn't you flip long?
Yeah, right? Where was my flip long?
Oh, man.
It ended the week at 84.50, but it got as high as 91.23. It was a little early on when it would be pulling back.
Would have been a good one if you went long.
Would have been great if I'd gone long. Yeah, $80. Anyway, brings my bet total down to $485.01.
And Random had VST, which opened at 22.37. Looked like it might do some good, but it actually pretty much closed flat. I think it went up 4 cents at the close. So Random made a dollar. So now it's sitting at 574.55, firmly in the lead.
Yeah, Random's over there like, I gave you guys a shot.
Is there any point in teasing the bet picks at the end? Because I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion for this month. I mean, I guess we could have a nice meme.
Yeah.
This is we're going to have to swing for the fences.
Yeah, you know, I do a lot of that. By myself, doing a lot of that. All right, Kyle, let's move on and talk about the news.
Yes, please.
Dow drops deep on moving inflation, COVID frustration, war damnation. We're just bringing you the fucking news. You got to recognize the game if you don't want to lose. We're just skippy-toobles trading information.
There we are.
Rioters raiding, insider trading, taxes are raising, bills on the hill. We got a crypto mill. No, they ain't growing weed. When the Fed speaks today, it's some shit we don't need.
Sing it, Dan.
Toobles trading information.
What?
Toobles trading information.
I'm inclined to agree.
Toobles trading information.
That is accurate. Very accurate. What information? Oh, where do we start? I got a whole shitload of stories here.
So much stuff has been happening. So many things.
I suppose we should start with the Fed meeting. I think that's the biggest news, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you weren't paying attention, the Fed had their meeting on Wednesday where they were going to actually raise rates for the first time in, God, since what, 2018?
It's been a while.
Trump bitch slapped Powell and told him to knock that shit off.
Twit slapped. Twit slapped.
Twit slapped. That's right. Yes. A lot of people are not, sorry, two of the officials are making a case for a half point rate hikes, but they ended up settling with 25 basis points. Bullard was the one dissenter in the meeting. He was the one pushing for the half point increase. He believes that the benchmark index rate should top 3% by the end of the year versus the 2% that's currently expected. He said the combination of strong real economic performance and unexpectedly high inflation means that the committee's policy rate is currently far too low to prudently manage the U.S. macroeconomic situation. The committee will have to move quickly to address this situation or risk losing credibility on its inflation target. How much credibility do they still have when it comes to inflation after spending a year calling it transitory?
Yes, and Fed Governor Christopher Waller recently has called it raging. So
yeah,
transitory to raging and
raging transitory inflation. Waller also voted for the quarter point, but he had been lobbying for the half point bump prior to the meeting. But he decided to change his mind based on the Ukraine situation that's still ongoing.
What's happening in Ukraine?
Apparently there's still a war.
Oh yeah, war were declared. I have a hard time seeing like just because there's a war going on and they we've got all this stuff going on, they're gun shy again. But I really feel like it's just more of the same, like calling it transitory, we're not going to do anything. Now they're calling it raging, but they're like, oh, but the war in Ukraine, so we're not going to really do as much as as we could. Like, I don't want higher interest rates, but...
Well, this feels like more kicking the can down the road, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more kick the can down the road. It's like, if they know interest rates have to be higher for stuff to balance out, then like, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's get it done.
Part of the other thing they mentioned in that meeting was that the next meeting, the plan was to start reducing the balance sheet. And that's even more bearish. Start pulling liquidity out of the market.
Right.
Whereas we had just been tapering up to this point where they were still injecting liquidity in the market. But now that looks like it's going to change. And the reaction to this whole thing was kind of mind-boggling. I think everyone is expecting it to drop like a rock, and it kind of started to before catching a bid and just really taking off and ending the week on a really high note.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Dan, do you believe in this rally?
I don't believe in any rally till it's happening. I if I'm looking at the SPY chart, it's got to get over 448 to start convincing me that we're back to being bullish.
I mean, at this point, it's already broken out of its bear trend. So
yeah,
it's at least looking bullish, but I'm still not 100% convinced either. I'd like to at least see it above the 200-day EMA.
We could be there. We're still in this weird zone. Like my friend Susan asks me all the time, like, how's stock market doing? How's the S&P doing? And I feel like for the last 2 months, I've always been like, well, it's making up its mind. We could be going solid bear. Could be going back to bull. Just over and over again, I say the same thing. And
well, at what point? I mean, we topped out January 4th before this latest move down. I mean, that's a good solid 3 months of just steadily dropping.
Yeah, but it could have just been a pullback, right?
Yeah.
On the longer scale trend, like the weekly candles.
If I was an Elliott wave person, I'd probably be drawing A, B, C, D, E. This is the ABC retrace.
Right.
Anyway, let's move on. What else we got? We're not supposed to talk about charts yet.
Have you heard what's been going on with the nickel, the metal?
I saw that looked like there was some kind of squeeze going on earlier in the week.
Yes, the London Metal Exchange had an embarrassing week-long suspension of nickel trading. There's a real big lack of liquidity in not just nickel, but in commodities in general.
Hmm.
Crude oil, which I'm sure we'll talk about soon, gas, wheat, metals. It's just the prices have become erratic as all of the financial strains of the world play out. Russian invasion constraining commodity flows. Many cases, rallies were quickly followed by a drop in prices based on those fears.
Just nickel is kind of a weird one, though, isn't it? I mean, like, I understand wheat and oil because the sanctions on Russia are affecting oil outputs. The war with Ukraine is affecting the wheat output, but nickel seems like a weird one.
I don't know why nickel prices more than doubled in a matter of hours on March 8th. In fact, nickel itself has become so valuable. A nickel is worth 10 to 12 and a half cents, like an actual coin.
Not American nickels, unless you find the older ones. I think the Canadian nickels, though, are made with actual nickel.
Yeah, if you've got an actual nickel, that's weird. Why do we keep calling it a nickel if it's not made of nickel anymore? Call it a fiver, fivey, I don't know.
Right.
So they're having a really big liquidity problem, not just in nickel. It's getting harder to secure quotes from dealers making any trades. If you are trying to trade, got a whole bunch of pissed off people on the London Metals Exchange because they were bullish on nickel, and it's so bad. Like, the price of nickel might be sky high, but the time anybody can find a buyer,
they can't actually sell it.
Mm-hmm. Like, the price has fluctuated back down. Wild shit, according to Bloomberg.
Oh, that would piss me off so much. You win the lottery and like, then all the gas stations close.
Yeah, right.
Then meanwhile, more people are winning the same lottery.
It's like basically like when you talk about like, oh, I don't like trading this stock because the volume is so low.
Right, yeah.
With all the weird shutdowns all over the world, causing a liquidity crisis means like, buyers can't find sellers, and that's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. They might be able to find like a low ball order, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that
would piss you off.
Definitely affected oil as well.
Well, speaking of oil is actually down 4% on the week. So we all know that the main driver for this is the Russian output, right?
Yeah,
which I think we've talked about this before. Russia's main export being oil and oil products, and with all the sanctions now, that there's what's the actual volume? I'm not sure what their actual output is in regards to like a percentage of the entire output, but
Just ballpark it. It'll be better than that commodities nickel mess that I just talked about.
It's going to be fun to edit. Oil is down 4%, but it's come down from the peaks, but it's still, people are still expecting it to be higher.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who is the guy? Manish Raj, the chief financial officer of Valandera Energy Partners, said the week's volatility dances around the confusion on what to make of the Russian oil exports. All eyes are on the export volumes for April and May bookings, which have so far yielded few buyers. But unless Russia can find a way to skirt around the sanctions, oil prices are poised to test new highs, he said. So I think part of what was bringing oil back down was that there's talks between Moscow and Kyiv. But they have kind of stalled since signs of optimism earlier this week that basically dropped us down from a 14-year high that their oil was trading at earlier or last week.
The International Energy Agency had a 10-point emergency plan to deal with rising oil prices.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's drive less and work at home.
Yeah, work home and drive slower. Yeah. If everybody in the world starts working from home and driving slower...
Oh, drive slower.
Ooh, in fact, their plan, part of it includes reducing speed limits on highways by at least 6 miles per hour. Work from home 3 days a week.
Does that mean everyone should just drive the speed limit then?
And, right? And go car free on Sundays if you live in a city. It's that easy, Kyle.
It sounds like an excellent plan.
Just everybody stop doing it.
Okay, 3 million barrels a day of Russia. That would lower demand by 2.7 million barrels a day within 4 months, according to their plan. But it's still missing 3 million barrels. That's not quite making up 3 million barrels a day of crude oil and oil products from Russia that we're going to start missing here in the beginning of April.
Yeah, and from what I understand, OPEC can't make that gap.
Can't or won't?
Well, it's releasing emergency oil stockpiles, but I guess won't. They're not going to ramp up production.
Yeah, that sounds more likely to me. I see, too, that Saudi Arabia was thinking about taking the Chinese currency for their oil.
Yes, I don't know what that means macroeconomically, but I don't think it's good.
Why? Yeah.
The talk's been ongoing for 6 years, but they've accelerated recently because the Saudis have grown increasingly happy with decades-old U.S. security commitments to defend the king. And because the Saudis want our support in the Yemeni civil war, and so part of that is like, fine, we'll look, they already sell a quarter of their oil to China, but they do it in dollars, which is weird to me,
right?
But the fact that the Saudis are going to be like taking the Chinese currency signals to me they're expecting a greater increase in their relationship with China.
Yeah.
Because they're not just stockpiling everything in U.S. dollars. They're like, well, now we want to have a stockpile of Chinese money as well. Definitely a sign of growing China.
That definitely sounds like they're trying to foster some closer ties. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's got bigger implications than we might realize.
Yeah.
If only we had an economist on the show that we could ask.
Yeah, right.
Why do we always get these good stories like this that would be perfect for talking to a guest that we just had?
We just had, right? Eric Mason, if you're listening, give us a call right now. We'll wait live.
Yep.
Oh, shit. Podcasts don't go out live. Damn it.
Oh.
I'm going to be waiting a while.
Guess we should move on then. You got any other stories?
I had one last story that was talking about how from CNBC, talking about how the investor behavior in Europe is mirroring the market's worst crises. The market's worst crises, new research has shown.
Crises, yeah.
Mutual funds are seeing a huge outflow and ETFs are seeing an inflow, which tends to be seen as a risk-on environment.
Right.
Mutual funds have access to money markets and other financial products, while ETFs are generally just bundles of stocks. So by moving money out of bonds and mutual funds and into stocks, it's really risky. And we haven't seen this, or I guess we should say when we see this, it tends to be at the beginning of big market crises like crises like the 2008 global financial crash.
Uh-huh. Everybody's, too many people are big happy bulls trying to buy in.
I guess.
That's when, was it? It sounds like we're getting towards peak euphoria.
Yeah.
Is what they're trying to say. But it's kind of like crashes happen from tops, don't they?
I mean, I thought they did.
I thought so too. Like, it's like, if we want to crash, I think we might have to revisit 4,800 on the ES first.
I don't know. If I was looking at the weekly chart and we called January 3rd the top, I mean, you could say that we're crashing. If we keep going down, I mean, this week was crazy. You know, we had a big week, upward week, but.
Well, I mean, this still looks like a controlled descent to me. Like, look at the chart on March when COVID happened. That's what I look at and call it a crash.
Right. No, I see what you're saying.
Like, this still looks too controlled. Yeah, this is still everyone buying the dip. And it works till it doesn't, right? All right. If you see see 480 on the SPY again, it's time to probably time to start moving some stuff around again.
Yeah, so Europeans selling their safe haven investments, investing in ETFs to get that diversification, to get that portfolio diversification.
Less diversified, maybe?
Yeah, well, you know, you got to have those ETFs. You got to have those stocks. Screw the safe haven shit.
Yeah, fuck that. You only live once. All right, let's move on. This is getting tough.
Well,
yeah,
long-time listeners know when it's time to move on, there's only one place I like to move on to. And that's talking about the wonderful Sue Pullen.
Oh, God, don't say that. Okay, talking about.
You don't like that? That you don't like that segue?
No. Dan, get off of Sue.
Filthy-minded bastard. Two bulls in a china shop is mostly proudly brought to you by Sue Pullen of Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender. Sue Pullen is a certified mortgage advisor who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She's got over 20 years experience helping thousands of homeowners, whether it's purchase, refinance, or even the wonderful reverse mortgage. Sue will help. She's licensed in 27 states, and Sue, reach out and see what she can do for you. Best way to reach her, just give her a call, 520-977-7904, or you can send her an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number 2289. Sue Pullen has an MLS number 206048. That email again is spullen@fairwaymc.com. That phone number, 520-977-7904.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is also proudly, all proud, to be affiliated with the Trade Pro Academy. Trade Pro Academy is the educational platform that offers institutional trader development programs to new and experienced independent traders, which means that you too can learn to trade like the big institutions. They've got a great staff of highly knowledgeable and successful traders, and there's no better place that we've found to learn everything you need to know to be a successful trader. Find them online at tradeproacademy.com or just use our affiliate link in the episode description. It's a great way to support the show and improve on your own knowledge and skills. Mm-hmm. And we still, as far as I know, have that discount code in our Discord.
Sweet.
If you sign up for there, you'll have instructions for how to take advantage of a 10% off. The only people that offer that, by the way, George is very stingy when it comes to discounts.
Super secret. Yeah, don't tell all your friends. You just give the
don't code tell out. Him either. Don't tell George.
Okay, yeah, you can tell all your friends, just don't tell George.
He doesn't listen, does he?
George, if you're listening, clap.
Probably not the live reads.
Well, and as well, I would like to add the awesome Flarian Leo from Order Flow Labs were kind enough to share their amazing toolkit for trading futures on Sierra charts. They have some amazing custom studies, structure, execution, buy sell zones, exhaustion absorption detectors, everybody's favorite reconstructed tape. They got something for everybody. These are their own professional tools that they are constantly adding to, tweaking, testing. They just offer a ton of support on their Discord. They've got lots of YouTube videos. They do live calls, interactive stuff together. If you are trading futures on Sierra charts, you really need to check them out at orderflowlabs.com. Oh, all right. You know, Kyle, that brings us to stocks.
Woo!
Stock time!
Now it's talk about stocks time. Looking for setups, it's still not advice. Big move.
news and earnings. All that we're saying, it's still not advice.
Stock Time.
Please don't sue us. Don't sue us. All right, Dan, what do you want to start with?
I would like to have you start.
All right. Well, I want to start with AMC.
Yes.
AMC recently popped back up in the news after they took out a 22% stake in a Nevada gold mine. This one had me scratching my heads. I'm not quite sure why a movie theater company would want to diversify into gold and silver mining. The trying to market their popcorn, I thought was a good move.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand this one.
That does feel like it's a little bit about out of left field.
I mean, maybe that the idea is to get out of the movie chain business altogether. it almost seems to me like this is like, it's almost like hedging your bets. Like, I'm not sure if we can make money just operating movie theaters. So maybe we'll try to move into something else.
Yeah, commodities are hot right now.
Yeah, the deal is a head scratcher given that AMC shares zero synergies with a junior gold miner, but investors are buying into the idea, at least for now. Mm. Okay. So, yeah, the shares of AMC were up 5%, but the Hycroft Mining, their shares jumped as much as 87%.
Whoa.
So that means the deal is already significantly profitable for AMC, assuming the price increase is maintained long term, which we all know the chances of that are less likely. What is the actual stock ticker for that Hycroft? Oh, I'm still on the week. HYMC.
Oh, wow.
It's
down at 30 cents and it popped all the way up to $2.60.
Still trading at $1.35 right now, but it's also still below the 200-day EMA, which this thing kind of fell hard back in October of 20.
Yeah. I would like to know why it fell.
I think a lot of the miners kind of took a bit of a beating around that time, but I don't know about that much. That seems a bit excessive.
From like $6 a share down to 30 cents a share?
It peaked at 16 in August of 2020.
Yeah, damn.
If you throw it on the daily and then zoom out to back at 21 as it was still falling, it built up a really nice support at 350. It still hasn't approached that even with this renewed interest, but it's building out another base. It looks like around 130. If it falls below that, then I'd be watching for the downside to continue. If it can hold that up, then we might see it push back up towards that 250 and maybe even challenge that 350 resistance. But yeah, definitely a head scratcher for me. I'm not sure I quite understand the idea there, unless it's just to try to eventually exit out of the movie theater business altogether and turn into like a holding company.
Right. The AMC conglomerate.
Adam Aaron's a hell of a CEO. He's got a pretty good track record, but if he decides that even he can't save the movie theater industry, the guy saved the Sixers. If this is the way he's planning on saving AMC, that's an interesting head scratcher.
Well, is basketball itself dying? How we watch movies is changing.
No, the Sixers were just god-awful for decades.
Why? That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not it's apples and oranges, saving the Sixers and AMC.
I know. Just saving the Sixers seemed like a much, much harder task, in my opinion.
You think it's a harder thing to do, right? Yeah, they were that bad. Take that, 76ers fans from the 90s.
Oh, it's good to be a fan now, isn't it?
Yeah, take that, older fans who were rewarded with a winning team for sticking it out the whole time.
I don't know. Wait, I should check their record. I haven't looked at it in a while. They might be bad again. Oh, no, they're third in the conference. They're still good.
They're still good. Okay. Yeah, now that I don't do sports betting and I play stocks instead, I don't know how sports teams are doing.
I know, right?
Weird side note, but I'm going to say it on air anyway. How fucking strange is it that boxer Klitschko I used to make bets on is like the fucking mayor in Ukraine leading troops?
What?
Were you aware of that?
No.
Klitschko, the boxer?
Yeah.
He's a Ukrainian politician now, and he's in the army. He's fucking like a major, and he's leading troops and shit.
No shit.
Yeah.
Which one? There's two of them.
Well, obviously the brother. Does that help?
All right, fair enough. All right.
Sorry, weird segue.
What other stocks you got?
I've been looking at Amazon because of that reverse split.
Yeah, yeah.
They also just this week announced the $8.5 billion acquisition of MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the film production company. So that means Amazon now owns the MGM catalog, like over 4,000 movies, a whole ton of TV shows.
Amazon Prime should start getting a lot better then, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I would hope so.
I mean, I liked Amazon Prime. I think that's my favorite of the streaming services.
Yeah, it's a good one. I really liked Wheel of Time.
Like the other thing too with this, so they're getting more content. And I don't know if you saw, but Netflix has been, not only they just recently raised their prices again, but now they're testing out ways to try to stop people from sharing passwords.
Oh, yeah. They're going to charge you an extra couple bucks a month.
Yeah. Like, good luck with that, Netflix. Kind of the whole point of, like, what happens then if you go out of town for work?
Right.
You're going to have to pay extra to log in at your hotel?
Look at my situation. I have Netflix, and three days out of the week, I'm at Jen's house. And I'm using my Netflix account. I don't know how much Netflix she watches when I'm not there, but I want to be able to use Netflix where I am, whenever I am. Any day of the week, I want to be able to go to her house for dinner and watch some Netflix and then go home and watch some Netflix as I go to bed and not be like, oh, you got two different people. Like, fuck you. That's me, Netflix. I'm mobile.
So Amazon looks like it's improving its services. Well, Netflix looks like it's taking a step back.
Yep.
Is the way I read that, right?
Right. I will say this. If I got a cut, I get the Amazon, I get Netflix, and I have Disney Plus and Hulu. And if I got to cut something, Netflix is going to be the one I'm going to cut.
I have not cut it just because it's the one that our kids use. And they don't live with us anymore. So if I got to pay extra to allow them to use the service that I don't really use that much, then it's not going to be long for my list either.
Right. Your kids. I bought you a subscription to a VPN. Have fun.
Yeah, that exactly. I think that's it. Are there any VPN stocks we should be looking at?
Oh, yeah.
That might actually be the play.
When I Google VPN stock ticker, it comes up with Global X ETF, Data Center REIT, and Digital Infrastructure ETF.
There's a VPN Technologies that's on the CSE. I wouldn't buy that.
So I guess VPN is the stock ticker. Right. Okay. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me. I feel like we are seeing... as opposed to like the days of cable when you had a million different networks broadcasting their channels to where you get this giant package. We're seeing things kind of like solidify and shift around into basically four or five big ones. And I think it's going to be down to like two or three in the next 10 years.
They're basically taking the spot of the cable companies. Like, we had a good run. Will it be like in two more years when like the better deal is going to be to get cable again?
I hope so.
Because that's kind of, it feels like the trend that we're heading down.
Technology is cyclical.
That's why horses got popular again. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you want to wrap up the stock news with the Toyota story that you had?
Oh, yes. Toyota has announced it's going to slow down production from April to June to be more, to quote, be more reasonable in line with recent realities.
What does that mean?
The semiconductor shortage means they just can't physically produce cars like they were able to, like they wanted.
I thought I saw something about some of the big automakers like actually like producing and shipping cars without chips. That's how bad it's getting.
Yeah, that's incredible. We'll just install the chip later.
I'm not sure if it means that or if it means like, maybe they got some chips in your cars that you don't really need.
Oh.
Maybe they're getting rid of some redundancies.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm not sure which is worse.
Yeah.
What's the Toyota stock ticker?
TM.
Is it TM? Why does it look like there's hardly any volume on it?
No, TM is Toyota Motor Corporation. Maybe because most of the volume's on the Japanese exchange?
Maybe. Yeah, I guess it is TM. Huh. It's kind of surprising. I would have thought that'd get a lot more trading action than it does. Because if you look at the price, it gaps around all the time. I don't think I'd want to play this at all.
You wouldn't want to play Toyota because of the volume?
Yeah, I just don't like look at the way the price gaps around every day. If you look at it on the daily, it looks like a dot chart.
Oh, I'm looking at the weekly chart.
Almost looks like a scatter plot.
I don't know. It still follows structure. We had a nice support just hold at 154 area coming off of that.
Yeah.
It hit probably all-time highs in January.
Mm-hmm. This latest move, the volume has been dropping.
So it was ranging from $100 a share to $140 a share since 2013.
Oh, wow.
And it broke out December 2020 after the COVID drop. never made it down to 100 with that big drop, and it's just rallied ever since. And this is the first significant pullback, and it was into support, and I might say on the volume node. It's a big volume node right there, 154.65.
Yeah, I don't like the way it looks like it's topping out right now, though.
Oh, the last 3 days?
It's had three days where it's been trying to overcome 172, and the last 3 days it's also been decreasing in volume.
It's flagging!
I just don't like seeing the buy volume dropping off like that.
It's weird also for me to see the three green candles in a row, which means it's gapping down overnight and then going back up and then gapping down overnight.
This one looks like it gaps a lot, though. Like every day is almost a gap. That's why I'd be hesitant to try to do anything with it.
All right. Well, I would expect the resistance to have been at 175, but you're right. It's like ghost resistance.
I have two other stocks that I wanted to look at with you.
All right, let's do it.
The first one is Salesforce, which has been one of my favorites for a while.
CRM?
Yeah, which it looks to me like it just finally broke structure. Like it had been pulling down since basically November.
Yeah.
When it peaked over $300 a share, and it's just been kind of falling since then. Well, today it broke above one of those prior lower highs at 217. It actually closed at 218.80 today. Volume double what it's had been doing the past, 10 days.
Big volume spike today, yeah.
I like this one. I got to see where I can try to grab hold of it. I like this to be a reversal moment for this stock, but trying to pick a point to get on board is where it gets tough. It does have a spot, thin spot in the volume profile at 222 that it's going to get past next. I think if it can break up above that 222 level, then we can start seeing it push a lot higher. 233 is a target, real high volume node at 240s, another shelf at 248, and then I have a pretty strong support around 252, which will be a resistance now.
Yeah, this was flagging pretty nice this week. Just this last 3 days has been incredible for it.
Yep.
10% move from Wednesday to Friday.
That one's going to be on my watch list. I do still have shares. I did trim some of it at 300. Maybe I might need to pick those shares back up now or wait until it gets over that thin spot on the volume profile between, 222 to 225.
Yeah, I want to see it bust over 220 and then pull back.
Yeah, I'd like to get a pullback, obviously. But yeah, I'm liking the way that stock looks.
And what was the other one?
The other one is Sabre, S-A-B-R, which I think we've talked about a few different times. This is the one that it's one of those softwares that it's like a legacy software that airports are kind of like stuck with. they can't take the time to shut down, international travel.
Right.
Long enough in order to upgrade their system. So the company never seems to have really good earnings, but for some reason, people still like this stock. And it looks like it might have finally found a bottom around 730s or so. The last 3 days, 3 days ago, we had a really nice up move. It kind of overtook a level around 1050 that I had. And now it's flagging on that level, but volume's increasing on this flag. And I like that better than I do like with Toyota, where it looked like the volume was decreasing on that flag.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if this can break up above that level, I think a bigger move back up to 12s, and then maybe see if we can break past that $12 spot that it failed at last time.
Yeah.
But it's no longer making lower lows and lower highs. This is looking a lot more bullish to me.
It never recovered from the 2020 COVID drop.
No. And I'm not even sure if any airline stocks really have either.
I'm looking up United right now. Yeah, it's the same story. So I think that's just we're seeing the airline industry in that. Because it's the same, like almost every peak would line up if you overlaid these two charts.
Mm-hmm. So the airline industry as a whole, then, time to be bullish on the airlines.
I'm seeing on United Airlines, I'm seeing the last 3 days while they're just green, just like Sabre, the volume's decreasing on United.
American Airlines is the same thing. It's been ticking up with volume dropping off. All right, so maybe not airlines as a whole. Looking at American, it's also still in a bearish too. So I wouldn't. I think Sabre is as far as a stock price. Looking at the price action, I think that looks definitively more enticing than something like American.
Yeah. Or LUV, Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, same with the UAL. Yeah, if you look at them, there's the trends are still down on all these other airlines.
Yes, sir. Yes, they are. All right. Any other stocks you want to look at?
No. No, I think it's time to move on to some crypto.
Ooh. Cryptocurrency. We got any music for that, Kyle?
You do.
Cryptocurrency. Thank you again, Rayosaurus, for that amazing crypto song.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
I love it. Now let's talk about some crypto. Kyle, what's your big story?
I have none.
Oh.
I was just going to ride your momentum.
But the momentum of the one story that I found to talk about.
It looked like a big one.
Most of the crypto news is just rehashing of stuff we've already talked about, like Ukraine gets more crypto donations. But this one, right?
Yeah, I know.
Is actually new. Elizabeth Warren has released a sanctions bill that critics, I should say, crypto advocates are saying is unconstitutional. Digital Asset Sanctions Compliance Enhancement Act is what it's called.
That's a fucking mouthful,
right? So they want to try and implement measures to have a greater control over cryptocurrency in light of the fear that Russia could be avoiding sanctions.
Right.
And critics are saying the measures are generally unnecessary and unconstitutional.
We talked about that last week, like the chances of them, like sanctioned oligarchs being able to move money around using crypto is low, right? I think.
Or the Russian state itself.
I can't remember who.
FBI Director Christopher Wray.
That's who it was. Yeah. Yeah. And this, it looks like the industry experts and other officials have kind of piggybacked on that in this article, saying that due to the transparent nature of blockchains and the existence of firms well equipped to trace the criminal actions, that the chances of this is pretty low.
Yeah, I guess Senator Warren straight up asked the dude from Chainalysis, Joni Levin.
That's a great name.
Yeah, right? If techniques like chain hopping and mixing made it easier to hide transactions, and he's just like, no. Not on the blockchain.
I know a lot of people like Elizabeth Warren, but every time she talks about anything finance related, crypto or stock, it seems like she has no fucking idea what she's talking about.
I think that's true of every politician I've heard talk about crypto, and most of them with finance.
Well, that is true. Yes. Just she seems to be out there more often in these types of stories than anyone else.
It's her favorite fight to fight, right? That's her bread and butter. Yeah. To her constituents, which, and right now it makes sense that somebody like her would be pushing something like this, because as we talked about last week, you know, people are scared. You know, they don't, nobody understands crypto, right? So automatically there's going to be a level of fear and distrust because you don't understand it. And we want, we want to do these sanctions. We want to hurt Russia for the invasion. Well, look what crypto's doing. Like, so they're going to be calling and writing. And I think it's really easy to see where she's coming from on this. Like, I don't think she understands crypto, or especially not like the Chainalysis guy does.
I just don't like I don't like using fear as a reason to pass your regulations.
Are you criticizing the American system? Because I'm pretty sure it's all fear-based these days.
That's why I live in my house and don't go outside. I just stare at my stock charts.
There you go.
So what's in the actual act?
Well, that's a good question. So the article on that I was reading said there were a few main points that it would require the president to identify foreign people or firms that are facilitating sanctions evasion and sanctioning them themselves.
Okay.
It would be giving the Treasury the power to block U.S.-based actors from interacting with addresses that are known to be or could reasonably be known to be in Russia. So this would be the blanket Russia ban. It would require taxpayers to report any transactions greater than $10,000, and it would require the Treasury to produce a report on foreign firms that are high risk for facilitating sanctions evasion.
Interesting that it's not just only sanctions, but it looks like this is I'm just wondering why that's like focused on Russia. Like, wouldn't you want to give the Treasury power to block U.S.-based actors from interacting with any addresses that are known to be or associated with people that are sanctioned? Like, why just Russia?
Yeah, good question. Because it was written by an intern in the middle of the night after a cranky text.
All right.
The thing that made me confused was there was a part of the article. Yeah. So I was like, okay. What about that is unconstitutional? It says the article continues talking about anyone in the bill, anyone who involved in any communication protocol, decentralized finance technology, smart contract, or other software, including open source computer code, would be branded a digital currency transaction facilitator. But it doesn't go on to tell us what that means in the bill.
Right.
What does it mean to be branded a digital currency transaction facilitator?
I would assume that would mean that they would fall under the category of having to be subject to, that's the foreign firms. I'm not sure what that would mean. I guess you have to read the whole fucking bill.
Yeah.
We have any crypto experts coming up? Anthony likes crypto. Maybe he'll know.
Hey, maybe he'll know. Yeah, right. I feel like it'd be weird if you were like on your weekend, somebody sent you a piece of code and you were like, oh, yeah. You know, I think I would do it like this for this open source project you're on. And then they're like, oh, they use that in a crypto coin. So you are now a digital currency transaction facilitator. What? It's making some open source code, bro.
I would assume it means that the bill applies to you then.
But yeah.
I'd have to read it. It doesn't look like much is going to come out of this, though. I don't think anybody, I mean, let's see, it's co-sponsored by like Tammy Duckworth, Debbie Staben now, Raphael Warnock, Chris Van Hollen, Tina Smith, Catherine Cortez Masto, and Bob Menendez. But I don't think it has much more support beyond that.
Beyond the Democrats?
Yeah. Even among Democrats, I don't think it has too much more support. I can't imagine this is going to go anywhere. This sounds like just getting publicity for saying you're doing something. You know what I mean?
Right. Mission accomplished. Here we are talking about it. Good job, Elizabeth. Great job.
Yeah, I tried to do what she said. Nobody wanted to do it.
Right? Stop fucking calling me about it now.
No. Exactly.
Well, that's all I had to say about that.
All right. Well, then.
Draw, motherfucker. I think we both got shot there just now.
I think so. All right, Dan, you want to go first? Or should I go first since you've been talking?
Doesn't matter to me, man.
I'll go first. My good this week, I think, is cutting losers when I lost faith in my thesis. I cut my BBBY shares. I tried to cut some of the other ones I had that I no longer believed the direction I was predicting was going to happen. Something that I've been not so good at recently. I did hang on to my Capital One puts. I did put in a sell order to try to get rid of some of them, but it did not go through. But looking at Capital One, I'd still not entirely convinced that I'm wrong yet. So I figure maybe I'll give it another week. But as far as like BBBY, I felt like I cut bait on that really at the right time. Probably could have not added, but can't be perfect. What was your good?
Probably the AMC calls I bought on Monday.
I like that trade. I like that a lot.
I could have even held them. I could have even held them longer.
You could have held them to expiration almost.
Yeah. Monday, it just opened up and it was like under 13 and starting to move back up. And it was first day of daylight savings time. And I was driving home late, right? In the morning, like expecting the market to open at 7:30 when it's going to open at 6:30 a.m. So I found myself like pulling over into like a Walgreens parking lot and on my phone being like, okay, I can't do the SPY, but what is happening right now? What am I seeing? And I saw that AMC setup and I immediately thought, how many other retail investors are on one side of the country and they're not ready for that early opening? We've classically seen big Monday openings. You've heard me talk about that at AMC here in the China shop many times. Mm-hmm. Mondays are the AMC when the money starts moving in. So after that drop, I bought a few calls and it's just four green candles after that. Like I could like you said, I could have held them. They were They were $14.50 calls.
What I liked about it was a weekly expiration, but you put a time limit on it for yourself to get rid of it. And I think you had, what was it, Wednesday, I think was the day you decided, like, okay, by Wednesday, I have to make a decision on this.
These are going
to
be gone by Wednesday.
And I like that. That way, that way you didn't let the data burn take you out of something that was profitable.
Oh yeah, I moved out of them on Tuesday. I bought them for 60, and I.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Tuesday. Yeah,
I sold at 75 and 80. So I mean, 20% on one and 30% on the other.
Another thing with AMC that I didn't think about, but probably should have, is that is people start getting their tax returns back.
Oh yeah,
you know, AMC is cheap again.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What was your bad?
You know, the usual, the typical, just keep fighting myself on, like, I want to be trading and I want to be in a trade. I'm still fighting that beast.
Yeah. You found any way to keep it in check?
I think so. It, you know, I'm limited by 3-day trades, right?
Yeah.
With my account. So that right there greatly limits my options trading. But on top of that, so I can't enter a trade if I can't get in a setup where I won't be stopped out today, right? I can enter swing trades, mm-hmm. like the BMY. I followed your lead on the BMY because I really like the setup. Like, I'm able to make trades like that as long as it's within my risk management parameters. You know, I'm not risking more than 3% on any one trade. So it's really by using risk management is ends up being like what's keeping me. Like, I have to find the setup, and then I have to be able to also, on top of, like, I like where the stock chart is, I have to be able to, like, well, is there an option strike and price that I could actually afford with my and within my risk management parameters that is worth it? That's not like a delta of 0.001.
Right.
That has open interest, right? Like, by not being able to find that. And even then, like today, maybe this was actually my good, even though it would have been profitable. I stopped myself from making a trade on ABBV, AbbVie, the pharmaceuticals company.
Mm-hmm.
It's hitting all time highs, and I could have bought $175 calls. It closed at $159.20 today. That expire in April, I'd have a good month. They would have already been profitable, but I stopped myself because if it had gone the other way and gone back down, I would have been stopped out, and I couldn't take the day trade hit.
I like it.
What was your bad?
Stop management. I've been trying to do more of the day trading myself, trying to get better at that. And I've been trying to utilize, like, futures charts because I've been doing less of the futures trading myself and letting the bot do it.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the charts up, so I've been trying to utilize what I've learned on the futures to try to do better trading the SPY. And I had a SPY trade loaded up. I was in it. It started to move my way, but then I moved my stops to break even too quickly. Ended up getting taken out before it really actually started to move. If I would have, you know, just held off and waited for it to start moving a little bit better, then I could have actually, you know, made some decent money on that trade. It's nice to have a bad that didn't cost me any money, but that's something that I've been working on, is trying to get better at managing my stops. And I did a much better job of that today with AMD. I went long on AMD and then used my trailing stops to manage a runner really well. And then I thought I did it fairly well the day before. So I'm not sure why there was a difference between Thursday versus Wednesday and Friday, but something I'm still working on. Still hard when you see profit to you'd start to panic and you don't want to lose any of that profit, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure how to explain it. When I figure it out, I'll let everyone know. do you have an ugly?
No, I don't think anything was particularly ugly. I mean,
me too, actually. This might be a first.
I guess the ugly was when I did let myself buy a bad trade. I bought a Tuesday, feeling good, closing that AMC trade. I bought a Virgin Galactic put, just one. And because I couldn't use a day trade, I had to keep holding it. See, this is how I learned. This is why I resisted today, is I learned the lesson with Virgin Galactic.
Yeah.
So I had to hold it overnight, and I bought it at like $1.12. And my risk management is, you know, I don't want to lose more than $30 in any one trade. And I ended up selling those for 71. So I ended up losing almost 40. And that was outside of risk management. So that was like big ugly for me, because I made a trade that was not within risk management parameters. And I forced myself into it by buying that when I wasn't able to get out of it that day. So, you know, If I see a good setup in that last hour, I'm more likely to make the trade.
Yeah. I like picking up swings at the end of the day anyway, because that's when the options pricing is kind of stabilized. Like if you're trying to grab them in the morning, like there's just too much volatility in the pricing itself.
No.
Spreads are wider. You wait till the end of the day, things seem to settle out a lot better. All right, well, time to pick some stocks, make a bet.
Bet picking time.
I need it, wanna beat it, gonna win it if I take it from you. I'm filling my positions, quit your bitching, random's gonna lose. Got a chart full of levels and a stop that's not too tight. It's bet picking time in the shop, so pick 'em right.
What do you got, Kyle?
I think, yeah, I lost the most, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yes, I think I was. I'm going to go with Sabre. I think I'm going to go long Sabre.
Okay.
S-A-B-R. Is this the last week? No, we got one more week. So I guess I should probably have some stop losses then.
Yeah, I guess. Stop losses would be a thing, right?
I mean, let's say $9. I'll put my stop at 9. Seems safe enough. I want to take profit at 12.
Well, guess that would make it my pick, right?
Sure.
I'm going with CNC, Centene Corporation.
CNC.
Their managed healthcare company. Do health services.
Ah. Look at that, hitting all-time highs. Medical industries, for some reason, has been doing really well lately.
So, yeah, they broke into all-time highs.
Probably because the lockdowns in China.
Right? I guess. I don't know. They broke into highs Wednesday, followed up with a great Thursday, had a pullback to the previous high on Friday that got rejected, even though it's a red candle. The tail dips into that other high. So
that's a solid rejection on that.
Loving this setup here for this bet pick. I'm going to put the stop at 85.
It seems like a solid area.
And I am going to put the take profit. Oh, I don't know. $100? No take profit.
Okay.
It's just got to go. Right. It's just going to rip and rip and rip and rip. Swing for the fences. Yeah, stop at 85, take profit, half at 100.
Half at 100. That's good. I like the halves. Keep a little taste just in case. All right, ready for a random?
Yes.
We have a New York Stock Exchange Consumer Durables, MUSA, Murphy USA Inc. That is a big green candle on Friday. Shit.
Yeah, it was.
Big volume. No, double the volume. People are buying up dips on this.
Yeah, specialty stores. They're a retail store. I don't know. They've got the lower lows and I don't know. You still draw a downward trend line on those green candles.
Yeah.
It's a falling wedge.
It's kind of, it's a tough one. I don't like the volume on Friday, though.
Oh, the volume on Friday?
At least for us.
Check out the volume on March 7th.
Yeah, big red sell volume. That dropped it down. Was that earnings? They just have their earnings?
No, the earnings are going to be in May.
That was a big doji with the other red day.
All the volume came in at the end of the day.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Huh. That's interesting.
In the last 15, 30 minutes.
All right. Well, this should be a fun one. With any luck, it'll be trading at 150 tomorrow.
Yeah, very likely, very likely. All right, folks, thanks for sticking around to the end of the episode. We love you guys so much. Everybody, it's just so amazing. We'll be back at you next week with another exciting interview and the dreary, dreadful, deadly, disastrous results of this bet. Yeah. Until next time, happy trades.
Bye.
Bye. Come on, Kyle. Pep that bye up.
Bye.
He's not excited. We're ending?
Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.